Go podcast 10.0c, which is the same kind of scheme we were using before, but now we're much more tired and punch drunk, so this gets really weird at the end. So this is the part of the podcast where we talk about the rest of the league. But first,
should we talk about our sponsors?
Yes. Why don't you read it this time? I've read it several hundred times.
Right. Well, our sponsors are wonderful. They are Underground Printing, The Boat Store, Homeshore Lending, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, the Residence Inn Ann Arbor Downtown, Peak Wealth Management, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Human Element, Ecotelligent Homes, and Michigan Law Grad.
Thank you, Seth. If I had to do that for a third time, I might have imploded. So, speaking of implosions, the Big Ten East. Let's just run down the things that have happened at Maryland. Freshman lineman Jordan McNair is run literally until he dies. And ESPN publishes a multiply sourced anonymous, but at least six or seven sources.
Based on current and former players.
Current and former players and former coaches at Maryland describing a toxic culture inside the program.
The one coach said he would never, ever, ever send his son there?
Yes, and I think that says...
A lot.
A lot. At Rutgers, no. Rutgers is...
Rutgers remains Rutgers.
Rutgers remains Rutgers.
Stick at to the Big Ten, all right?
At Ohio
here forever.
State...
There were no bear-related shenanigans this offseason, unfortunately.
At Ohio State... Brett McMurphy reveals that Zach Smith has a decade-long history of spousal abuse, amongst other less savory, less unsavory, just not great behavior, including having sex with someone at the office, having $2,200 worth of sex toys. How large of a package is this?
Did you have to put it in those exact terms? When we're talking about a man who ordered ball hammocks.
I didn't. I mean, I know that this is my fault, but I never wanted to hear those words.
We just got the ever. Explicit rating
describing,
for the entire
describing
season,
a man
by the way,
who
guys.
Looks like one. But
three podcasts in, we have the explicit rating now. Thank you, Zach Smith.
And
ruin everything you touch. Why did Ohio State keep
Ohio
it?
State? As like a 12-hour meeting in which they decide.
Well, and we have left out an important thing here, yeah. Which is that Urban Meyer shows up to Big Ten media days and bald-faced lies multiple times, faced with multiple specific questions about what he knew, when he knew it, and what he did about it.
And that's proven. And then the first thing he does after the Big Murphy story comes out is
delete
text messages.
Delete all his texts?
And he goes to a guy to ask him how to delete all of his texts.
Well, yeah, and then he does it. I mean, like the...
Which people have talked about it like it's some kind of amazing thing, but it's just like a thing you toggle on your iPhone.
Yeah. Which you shouldn't be able to do on an iPhone subject to FOIA. But anyway.
Yeah, indeed.
So if that's your first reaction to a big story coming out is to destroy the evidence, you should be fired. That's...
Also, if you do everything else that Urban Meyer has done in this situation, so, the report that came out...
Ohio State has a 12-hour meeting, and I think... Nicole Auerbach is right about this, is that that meeting was largely about how to square the actual serious report that they did, an investigation. They legitimately did an investigation, and then they tacked on a bunch of crazy crap at the end, justifying them not firing a guy who should obviously be fired.
Yeah, I think Dan Wolken said something about how it was, they had to figure out how to take a very serious matter and have a not serious response to it.
I mean, it feels like two different documents kind of stapled together.
Yeah.
The one that the adults
there's,
put together.
There's the investigation and then there's
the justification.
And then the
one that Gene Smith put together.
I mean, I feel like they were probably haggling over the TCU game in there. I really think that was because also we were hearing things about how it was just first of all, potentially going to be time served, which is unbelievable. And makes me think that was that had to at least be on the table when they walked into that 12-hour-long meeting.
Ignore the games.
And also, he gets to come back September 2nd, I believe. He actually misses, really, this is a one-game suspension, and then he's a ghost coach for
two
weeks.
He gets to make the game plans.
Right. Except somebody who actually knows football strategy in the modern era and gets to coach practices and actively does that.
He just
can't be on the sideline during the game.
It's the most visual, least possible punishment they could give him. Like, oh, he's losing. You're not going to see him on the sidelines.
When he's not on TV.
Right. Yeah.
It's a very visual punishment.
He has to miss three press conferences as well.
I don't think we need to really talk about how stupid this is and how it's impossible that they didn't fire this guy. I think we're all in agreement.
Anybody who's defending that is not a serious person who should be listened to.
I mean, they're an Ohio State fan. There's literally nobody who's not an Ohio State fan who has defended this.
Yeah.
Everybody else thinks that this is well
Joe
beyond
Rexrode.
The pale.
No.
Rexrode was...
Rexrode said that would happen everywhere.
Yeah.
Because Rexrode was the lead beat writer at Michigan State for a long time.
Yeah.
So he should talk.
It would happen there.
I mean, self-reflection would be a good thing for Joe Rexrode.
I know, like, how many things flew right under Joe Rexrode's nose? Good investigative reporting there, buddy. They weren't even hiding it.
No. They were just walking straight out of jail and back onto the practice field.
I wonder why some guy got suspended for the Rose Bowl. I wonder, too. I'm Joe Rexrode. Anyway.
But there are circumstances we'll never know about why Michigan State people were not allowed to do journalism for the last decade.
Anyway.
That's not what this is about, kind of.
I just, you know...
Yet?
Pile that on top of the Penn State thing. Pile that on top of the university-wide Michigan State scandal.
Yes.
And you have...
And also specific stuff within the Michigan State program that has gone on for as long as D'Antonio's been there.
Yes.
Truthful.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite thing about Iowa is that they will just periodically drop D'Antonio shade about Chris Rucker going from jail to the playing field.
Yes.
From like Thursday to Saturday. I think Brian Ferentz just mentioned it in a press conference.
Man, it has been a long... I think it's been over a decade.
I wouldn't get over that either if I was Kirk Ferentz. Like,
no.
Anyway, so you have, you know, four of the seven programs in the Big Ten East.
And Indiana recently fired a coach for
abuse of behavior. But they fired him.
At least they did fire him. That is true. And like, that very much separates them. They took the correct action, and they didn't drag their heels about it.
Like, they fired Kevin Wilson.
And that's the best coach they may have ever had.
Right. So that's like a counterpoint to Rexrode right there. Is like, that was a pretty big decision for them to make. They made it. And they made it without any media pressure. Just one day he was coached, the next day he was fired.
And we are watching it destroy that program. Kind of. I mean, we're watching it so that Chaos Team has become something entirely different and that they're never going to rise above the level that they reach with Wilson, because that offense is plummeting because Mike DeBoard coaches their offense.
So, like, I don't know if that was, like,
they replaced Kevin Wilson's offense.
This is what we want Big Ten teams to do. We want if you fire Urban Meyer, you have to get Mike DeBoard for 3 years.
Honestly, that should be like an...
Well, yeah, that is a rule. That's a rule now. Yeah. We're going to push hard for this.
That's the program who's
serious. They can keep the Michigan State-Ohio State schedule imbalance on our schedule if they institute the DeBoard rule.
So Indiana, I feel, has done what they needed.
That's true.
But you can throw in Rutgers there, whose last coach was like so ham-handedly bad at NCAA violations.
And their entire athletic department. I mean, they had to fire an athlete. Julie Herman was
Julie
a disaster.
Herman. So
they had the abuse of Mike Rice, the abusive basketball coach. I mean, that athletic department had problems recently.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're looking at five out of seven teams in this division who are just not... All of them are beyond the pale, but most of them are, and then some of them are approaching the pale. And it's like, what are we doing here?
And we still, I mean, we don't know what's going to happen with DJ Durkin yet. And that is...
Yeah, Maryland does have a chance to, like, the higher-ups have an opportunity to, like, fire him, fire everyone else around there for cause and fix that.
There's no way DJ Durkin ever coaches another college football game.
I wish I could agree with you.
No, there's no
like
way.
I wish I had enough faith to agree.
You don't think some
Schools had to
USF picks them up as
a couple different programs had to get. First of all, Art Briles has been going around as a consultant. Art frickin' Briles. Art Briles got hired for a head coaching job in the Canadian Football League before there was a protest. And now he has been shipped over to Italy, where apparently they don't know about rape.
Well, but like he's been
gotten out of the paint.
That's what it takes.
He went so far.
Yeah.
And football culture will allow football people to justify what DJ Durkin did, because it isn't that far removed from how coaches coach.
He got a player killed,
disgusting extreme. A lot of college coaches have gotten players killed.
I think that there's a difference.
And it doesn't happen in the NFL.
I think that there is a difference between like heart issues, which happened at Northwestern. Like, I think that's a different field of play than like this guy has a seizure and we leave him for an hour before we call 911.
Yeah, but like, I mean, I know it was a long time ago, but George O'Leary stayed at UCF. George O'Leary killed a kid at UCF and stayed there. He was still the coach. I know we have like moved past some things, but that was not very long ago.
I still feel like the media attention here is makes Durkin so toxic that he can't be a coach.
I know there are legal entanglements and whatever, but why haven't they fired him yet? And why did nobody talk to that family until it was a media thing?
Well,
some of it is people. I just, how do you not investigate why you killed the kid until the media did it for you?
Well, I think we've seen
died at practice and nobody was like, let's look at this.
I think a lot of the things that happen are just because you have this corporatization of the academy where it's just, you have this CYA effect where it's not about the institution. It's about you personally. And you see that, you feel that you are the institution. We saw that at Michigan State when Luana Simon wouldn't step aside until people were like, you have to go. And
Ohio State is making Urban Meyer the institution right now. They have chosen that.
Even then, Luana Simon still got a golden parachute for leading the worst scandal probably in American athletic history.
I mean, Michigan State, but she was a large part of it.
By pure numbers, it's the worst sex scandal in the history of the United States.
Right, so she was part of this, and she led this totally incompetent organization that let Larry Nassar see patients for 18 months after he was investigated,
and let his boss keep pictures of
right.
Yeah.
So like this is so far beyond the pale, but they like the board of trustees is still like, yeah, sure, let's have this happen. You just can't.
John Engler is the president of that university,
right? And it's
appalling.
Yeah, it is appalling, and you just kind of wonder, like, I think you kind of go back to Bo, and Bo was like, we can't add Penn State to this league, because once you start there, you just don't stop, and God, was he right. Like, we have Maryland in this league, we have Rutgers in this league for nothing other than cable subscribers.
And what have they provided, especially now, what positive have they brought to the Big Ten?
I like Bruno Fernando's name. That's about it.
Yeah, the Maryland has some good basketball players. That's about as much positive as those two entire programs have brought to this conference. You also brought in Nebraska, which is the weakest one academically, where it's the first non-A. I mean, I know that's kind of like a hand wank whatever thing, but like it is the first non-AAU program in the Big Ten.
Expansion is not the problem here. I think the problem is football has grown even beyond.
Expansion is part of a thing where money's been put above everything else.
Exactly.
Right.
And also, college athletics are designed to hide the money.
Yeah. I mean, I posted about this today, where like you have this whole system where everybody thinks that NCAA is a joke and is avoiding it at every turn. And so you have this existing see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil system. And, you know, as long as that's about kids getting paid to go on official visits and getting compensated for their labor, there's nothing ethically wrong about that.
And the people who actually comprise the NCAA,
right,
which are the member institutions, because the NCAA itself is nothing, really. It's an ineffective investigation team,
right,
led by an idiot. I mean, Mark Emmerich.
Okay, I didn't know which one you were talking about. So
they've lost anybody. Their investigative group after Miami, pretty much everybody of any salt left.
Yeah. So
and they all got jobs in compliance offices.
So. Yeah, they flipped. Everybody in college athletics who's not a student athlete, and I shouldn't use that damn term.
Athlete.
Has a vested interest, a financial interest in keeping this the way it is.
But then you have this culture, and the culture is really easy to extend from we are breaking this rule about not paying players to we are breaking this rule about not raping people. We are breaking this rule about not killing people. We are breaking this rule about...
I just don't think... I think those things are so separate because I also believe that those things go... Like, the paying players stuff... I'm one of those it happens everywhere, guys.
I mean, obviously. I don't think anybody isn't.
So how flagrantly you do it?
Whenever there's a black market somewhere, once you're breaking some rules, you're going to break other rules.
Yeah, you have this culture where it's like, we don't talk about this. And if it's about payments to players, like...
Okay. Well, that's fair. That's fair. The like...
And then if we don't talk about this, we don't talk about Zach Smith. We don't talk about... Yeah. This abusive strength and conditioning coach at Maryland, and there are consequences to that. There are consequences to Jordan McNair. There are consequences to Courtney Smith, and the structure of the NCAA makes it so that every major program has a program a culture of secrecy,
and players have by design the only power they have is to collectively strike,
right?
Which would take. Coordinating a massive number of college students, from a wide variety of backgrounds, which is a very difficult thing.
College football had this problem before, over a century ago, what they did is the Big Ten started and the NCAA started, and what they both were the faculty of the schools coming together and saying, this is getting out of control. Football can't be about money. This is going to be a huge thing. We have to control this ourselves. It was the schools doing it. And the NCAA has gone so far away from what that is, and the conferences have gone so, because all they do is they sign the contracts for television now, and that's all they exist to do. You need a new NCAA. You need the university presidents who have the reputations of their schools. Ohio State, people are not going to talk about Ohio State's engineering program for the next year. They're going to talk about Zach Smith.
Here's the problem. Ohio State's president was once E. Gordon G., who was happy that Jim Tressel did not fire him. Michigan State's current interim president is, once again, John Engler, who should be shipped out to sea on a rowboat with no oars.
But, I mean, these institutions are... I don't know where else to go, where else to put it.
There's no accountability for anybody.
Yeah.
And I don't think...
No.
I don't know what to do about that.
You fight to change it so that college athletes get to participate in capitalism?
Well, I mean, I feel like... You know, Dennis Dodd had an article about the Maryland stuff.
Oh, I was
like,
blocked, so I don't know.
Well, he was like, you know, if college athletes actually had a union, this kind of stuff wouldn't be able to happen.
Yes.
So right now you have a system where the college athletes who are so terrified they're going to lose their scholarships that even in the aftermath of this Maryland thing, they will only talk to ESPN anonymously.
And also some players pushed back with their names on it. I mean, some players have defended DJ Durkin.
I haven't seen that.
Some current and former Maryland players, I believe, have defended DJ Durkin, and in football,
you're
here to serve the institution, not the other way around.
And
that's,
I mean,
we're talking
about a coach who is abusive. And if we're talking about it in the context of abuse, first of all, like, DJ Durkin isn't the only coach who's at least kind of wired like this.
Sure. I mean,
when these guys come up through high school programs where there's often even less accountability.
You remember Chad Henney's coach, that like halftime tape?
Like, some of those do, like, lunatics. So that culture can get ingrained into you when you're a teenager, and then you're on a team, and you just assume that that's how it goes.
You know, I feel like this is something that Nick Saban doesn't engage in. I feel like Nick Saban, who still calls his wife Miss Terry, is just not going to do that. Like, if you're not producing or whatever, he's just going to cut you. But he's not going to abuse you to get what he wants. He's just going to be like, I've got six 65.
Yeah, some of that is a benefit from being able to stockpile that much talent, but also he has not done that. And I also
he has a functional HR department because that's the way to win. What Durkin was doing was not making his team better. It was empowering Durkin.
I mean, that's the other thing here. What DJ Durkin was doing was not conducive to winning. That is not how to get a football program behind you, as quite evidenced by the number of players who were willing to talk to the media about him.
Yeah, I think people just have this Bear Bryant Texas.
Yeah, no, it's the Junction Boys thing. Yeah. And it's always been lionized, and it shouldn't, because it's not 1940 anymore.
So there's a line between the Maryland stuff and then I think the requirements to play high-level football, that it's going to be tough. You're going to be in the weight room constantly. You're going to have this weird diet. You're going to be spending 40 hours a week participating in football and trying to get...
And grown men are going to swear at you. Like, that stuff is not like...
But you're not going to be successful if all you know how to do is get beaten down into an automaton. That's not how you, like... That's not what parents are sending their kids to school to do.
That's not what I'm asserting. I'm asserting is, like, where...
There's a line, and it's hard to find.
Yeah, where is it?
I think
like DJ Durkin at Michigan per Jabril Peppers, like, said he engaged in what he called bully coaching, that he
called his behavior extreme.
Called his behavior extreme, but also didn't seem to think that it rose to a level of, like, dangerous.
But he was also at the University of Michigan post Shane Morris incident, I think a big thing, because I don't think you can trust football coaches be able to do this on their own. I don't even know if you can trust athletic directors necessarily, since so many of them come from a football background. You need to have a training staff independent from the coaching staff that is empowered by the university to make calls over them. And that obviously was not the case at Maryland.
No, the basic...
And I think they also need to... Confidence. Like, there's not a lot of overview of... I mean, I can't remember where the article was posted, but there was an article on the vagaries of the strength coach certification process, and that it's kind of just a Wild West, like, there isn't really a standard yet.
So that's got to change.
That absolutely has to change, especially since, as we've learned both through this Maryland incident and the way coaches talked about a lot of other schools, and Spencer Hall did a great article recently on strength coaches. Like, those guys are often the coach's right-hand man.
They're around the players more than the coaches, because they're not limited to how much they can be.
That is often the person tasked with setting the tone for the entire program. We got a taste of it with Rich Rodriguez doing that with Mike Barwas.
Yeah.
to have no standard for those guys seems like something massive is missing there. The NFL, for all of its mishandling,
they had Corey Stringer 17 years ago, and they're like, this is over.
Yes, and it's been over,
and
that hasn't happened since.
27 kids have died in college since.
Yeah, and it's not like the guys in the NFL don't practice hard and don't get pushed hard, and don't practice through playing hurt.
Yeah, it's just this dumb macho shit.
Yeah, it's insane, and it's not good for anybody. It doesn't. It does not make your team better. I will never be convinced of that.
I mean, there's a lot of people who think it does, but how are you gonna? I mean, it's just one of those.
It is another, like, how do you draw the line? Because there are guys who have pushed it up close, and I'm sure have gotten a lot out of their may have been lucky to dodge a bullet too.
Let's talk about Michigan in specific. So when Rich Rodriguez comes in, you know, Mike Rosenberg has a fainting fit because Greg Fry is publicly, like, they invite guys into practice, and Greg Fry is too, like, mean, and, like, he's yelling at them, and he's saying some things that might be, like, Mangino stuff. How do we feel about that? Is that, like, a problem, or is that just, like, is there anything you can say that really, like, trips something for you?
My problem is when you get into bigoted language,
okay,
gendered language. It's stuff that is very prevalent, and I would be a fool to think does not happen everywhere. But, like,
challenging, you know, like manhood.
I mean, we're talking about toxic masculinity in football culture right now, and that's, I think they could do well to get that out of there.
But it's
very. I mean, I think it is not. I think it can't just be a thing that you look at specifically what is said, but also how frequently and in what context. Because what seems to have happened in Maryland was the culture was constant berating.
Well, culture, and then
and like just, very forceful, like making these guys lower than dirt.
Yeah.
That there, I don't know if it's necessarily something that you can put like very specific guidelines on about policing language. I mean, it's just so difficult to do. But there's a line where like
printing rules are
like,
just
are you treating them as human beings?
Yeah,
basically.
I mean, it's hard to see from the outside. Someone has to be inside because the players know.
Yeah, but nobody gets to be inside because we have this. Like they get,
and
to
I think that's
secret.
Part of the problem.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
it's part of the problem that at athletic departments are able to function like I don't know
many countries.
Yeah, like the FBI,
fiefdoms.
Yeah, like that. So like, that there is a culture of secrecy, and that is accepted. That schools have this right to lock everything down. And this isn't about like I want to be able to talk to all the players whenever I want. This is like I want the coach to be available to answer some questions. And this is a person who's at the University of Michigan at the very least, this is a person who's getting paid. You know, this is a state institution.
Sure,
this is the highest paid state employee, and he's not willing to answer a question about whether he was concerned by DJ Durkin's behavior under him when he employed DJ Durkin at two different schools and DJ Durkin just helped kill a kid.
It's not good.
That's unacceptable.
I mean, you say unacceptable, and that's like, all right, well, what does that mean?
It means he needs to have a better answer for it. He needs to answer that question.
Okay.
Or people need to start looking into whether this is part of the... I mean, I think people already need to start looking into whether this is part of the culture at Michigan, because he had Durkin at two stops.
Yeah, I feel
and Fry, if you want to throw, we were just talking about it too.
What I'm saying is, I feel like the accusations against Fry are fairly weak.
I thought so too. I can't tell you unless I'm inside the program.
I mean, I think that's the problem here. We don't know.
You can't know.
Yeah, we didn't know anything about Kevin Wilson until Indiana fired him.
And we still don't know anything about Kevin Wilson.
No.
He's at Ohio State
now. We know that he got fired.
And Ohio State can't promote him to head coach, even though he's probably more qualified than the guy they promoted to interim head coach.
No.
Because of the optics.
But it's one of those things where I just feel like there's nothing that can penetrate these veils ever, because people just don't care enough. Like, nobody cares at Ohio State. Nobody really cares at Michigan State, because they win, they beat Michigan, and they get to keep
it. I think if you start actually paying the players, you empower them to stand up for themselves.
Yeah, a contract, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, that is the big difference between the NFL and the NCAA in this regard. And the NFL does not have this specific problem. And the NFL has a litany of problems.
Yeah,
that the NFL somehow has managed to eliminate a problem that the NCAA has, like, spread throughout.
Well, I mean, it comes from the nature of NCAA is that
these
players are not empowered.
Not good.
That has always been the nature of
the NFL.
NCAA.
Is
stop
horrible.
Talking at the same time.
Yeah.
So you do have the union, and every time there's a collective bargaining agreement, like some off-season stuff gets dialed back. You know, you get the OTAs get reduced. You're not hitting every week in practice. Like, I don't think there's, like, if you could magically transport yourself and become a NFL player or a college player, and you just, like, what is the safer, kinder, better place for me to practice? The NFL is that by a mile, and it's all because the players' union has leverage. And as long as college football players don't, they won't.
It's telling them.
And also, they're professionalized at the coaching staff, the training staff, the strength staff.
Yeah. No yahoos, like whatever that Maryland's guy was. Like, what would he get, like a Caribbean certificate for like scuba diving or something?
Yeah, what the heck was that buyout?
Like, the kid's having a seizure. Seizure means you call the hospital. I don't care, like...
there's no point to be proven there.
Right. He's not like, faking
it. To belabor what happened is, like, you know... It's sickening even just to talk about it. The point is, if that hadn't happened, or if like he'd had a seizure and then like he'd recovered, would Maryland have been exposed?
Would we know about this?
No.
Yeah, I don't think we would.
I mean, if he's in the hospital, like the rhabdo stuff at Iowa was a fairly big deal there, and they had to, like...
Yeah, and that guy's now the highest paid strength coach in the country.
Well, I mean, I do think that there is a positive example for what to do in these situations that none other than Scott Frost provided. Because they get there and they start implementing their program, and they have two guys come down with rhabdo, and they get the question, and Scott Frost is just like, this is exactly what happened. Here it is in three paragraphs of detail.
And we're not going to let it happen again.
Yeah, and this is on us. This is why we're surprised by this, and we don't want it to happen again. And I find that utterly convincing, and I think that Scott Frost is going to run a good program at Nebraska, and I hope they have success. Yeah. So it is possible, but the culture of I don't want to talk to anyone and nobody gets to know anything about that goes inside my program is rampant. It happens at Michigan, although I'm not saying that Michigan has done anything anywhere near.
On the Big Ten East level. By the way, how improbable is it that Nebraska is our example for transparent college football program, given what they were in the 1990s?
I mean, they hired Mike Riley. That's a cleansing moment.
Tom Osborne hit a gun for a player.
Yeah.
Did they fire Bo Pelini because of one of these problems? Was that?
He kept going 9-4, and that's a pretty good situation for Nebraska. But he was just so over the top that I think that contributed to his firing.
I mean, when you go from that to hiring Mike Riley, it says something.
I mean, there is something about like the coach who just can't keep his shit together on the sidelines. Like, you know, Harbaugh got his penalty at Ohio State, and he toned it down a lot.
Oh yeah,
He was a very different sideline presence a year ago.
It was disappointing from a gift maker standpoint.
Sure,
from a cameraman standpoint too. They kept cutting to him.
He'd just be standing there, and just like, this is nothing for me, but I will stop while I'm going through the tape.
If you're Nebraska and you see Bo Pelini getting one of those flags like every other game, like at some point. That's going to move your needle.
And you do wonder with some, like, if that extends to how the person controls their football program and their life.
It comes back to, we don't know until, like, unless you're inside the program, we don't know. So someone inside the program who's at practices has to be the one reporting.
I wonder what Oklahoma's like. Like, Bob Stoops steps away at 57. He has Lincoln Riley take over. Like, one of their other offensive coordinators, like, there's this picture of him, like, in a bat costume at practice. Like, they took Eric Swenson. They didn't really seem all that fussed by the fact that he really didn't improve over the last few years of his college. Like, I wonder if Bob Stoops has built a culture at Oklahoma that is, I mean, it's tough and it's very assertive and as a football culture, but it's a positive one.
I mean, I would say that was when USC was at their peak under Pete Carroll, and you'd see the videos of them doing goofy pranks and whatever. I mean, that and they were bringing Snoop Dogg onto the sideline. Yeah. I mean, that was a fun program, and they were selling that hard, and it didn't seem like an act.
Yeah.
I think that worked pretty darn well.
I think most programs are like that, because I think that's the best way to run your program.
I don't think most programs are like that.
They have to recruit, and the recruits come and see, and they talk to the players who are on the team.
I think most football programs sell you on being a really good football program.
I mean,
and the fun part, a lot of coaches would prefer that you don't say that word.
I think a lot of high schoolers play
football's not necessarily supposed to be fun.
I think a lot of high schoolers play for coaches who are Durkin or worse, and
let's not say worse here.
I think that a lot of they play for bully coaches in high school, and they consider that the norm, and they consider that right and proper, and they go and see a fun-loving USC, and like, all these guys aren't serious.
I think a lot of
recruits were like, this seems, I'm going to do this, because they were from LA for one, and then...
I
think you get a different impression of a lot of coaches when you're recruited than when you hit the practice field for them for the first time.
I bet Reggie Bush met Jessica Biel. That'd be good. Especially back in early aughts. That'd be nice. Hello, ma'am. What? That's probably what he said. He's a gentleman. Played for the Lions. Can't be playing for the Lions and not be a gentleman.
That's true.
I don't know. I honestly have no idea.
I've renounced my Lions fandom.
That's their shtick.
Yeah, the most gentlemanly NFL team.
Every time they draft a guy, they talk about, like, you know, this guy went to Stanford and was a...
And then they hired a guy who was accused of rape as their head coach.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Yeah. So, anyway. I'm out on the Lions and the NFL entirely.
Well, this was a cheery segment. Let's have an ad break. All right, so let's, now that we've done that, let's...
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present The Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com. If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor, from San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far, because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Change, change, change. Change, change, change.
Talk about the league from a football perspective. Yeah, it's Wisconsin, and then someone coming out of the East that could be Michigan, but it's probably going to be Ohio State.
Yeah, I mean, now that they've settled their coaching situation, and it's not going to impact them in any meaningful way.
Yeah.
I mean, even if they trip up against TCU, that doesn't mean much for the Big Ten.
I mean, they are breaking in a new quarterback, so that is always kind of a question mark.
But we did also see that last year that he looks like he might be pretty darn good.
Yeah.
He had a couple lucky passes, though.
He had a lot of them that weren't lucky.
He's a different kind of guy. He's going to be more of a thrower than JT Barrett, who was running back-ish. Not to disrespect him anyways.
JT Barrett opened up a lot of things for that offense with his ability to gain 6 yards no matter what.
Yeah.
He did limit that offense a little bit with his inability to hit passes downfield on any sort of consistent basis. So I don't know. I think those things sort of balance out, especially when you got J.K. Dobbins in the backfield too.
And Haskins can run. He's not a stalwart guy.
But he's definitely more of a pocket guy, and that'll be interesting because until recently, those wide receivers were coached by a sex fiend who did no work.
They were really coached by Brian Hartline.
Okay.
But that might not mean good things for Brian Hartline. I mean, he was very new. I mean, they clearly brought in Brian Hartline as GA while trying to quietly push Zach Smith out when they were doing that.
The most boggling thing about the Ohio State thing is, like, he's bad at his job. He's your worst coach.
He's bad at his job in every way.
Why are you putting everyone's ass on the line for, like, the worst coach I can imagine?
Because he is Earl Bruce's grandson, and lest we forget, Earl Bruce was fired at his last coaching stop for player abuse.
And, like, that's, like, saying something back in the 70s.
Well, it was the early 90s.
But still,
we've come a long way since then.
I think we did that
sort of.
We already did that.
Depending on how you listen to the last segment.
No more.
I mean, Ohio State's going to be really good. They have a couple of questions to answer.
Yeah.
Is their offensive line grown up now? Because, like, even last year.
I'm worried the answer is yes.
I think they were
starting. I mean, like, Isaiah Prince was not a huge target.
I don't think he's going to be great, but
Michael Jordan developed as you'd expect for a guy who hit the field as a true freshman who'd beat out some older guys.
I mean, they just have a bunch of dudes.
Yeah, I mean, anybody who pushes through has beaten out some very highly touted players to get there.
Penn State has Trace McSorley back. No Saquon Barkley. They do have Miles Sanders, who is a 5-star.
But they have no Joe Moorhead.
Although
they could get the Wile E. Coyote year.
Yeah, I feel like...
Although,
like,
his was more with the play-calling genius, and that may be something that's
tough. They're going to get some of that because McSorley has all that whole playbook in his head, and he was really kind of running the offense.
I feel like they're going to take a step back because they don't have a Heisman candidate at running back. But, you know, this is definitely like a Wile E. Coyote year, I think, for them, and then we'll see, like, what the new guy has next year. I mean, the play-calling thing is a good point because Moorhead was really, really good about that. The one thing that kind of leapt out to me after last year's Penn State game, which did not go well.
I mean, he out-coached Don Brown in that game.
He set that Saquon Barkley touchdown. He set up all game.
So, like, the Barkley touchdown, the first one, like their first snap, like there was an SI article, I think Andy Staples did, and like they're talking about how they put that together. And one of the things they did is it's the first snap of the game, so these guys are going to be really fired up. Let's have our left tackle pass set. And Rashawn Gary flies way upfield, out of the picture. Cutback lane is there, touchdown. And I'm just like, okay, Joe Moorhead is good at his job.
He's very good at this, yeah.
So I think not having him will be a problem, but maybe not this year. And then on defense, They don't have a guy who really leaps out as a star, especially on the defensive line.
And speaking of that defensive line, they've lost two big time contributors to retirement.
That's true. They had a couple of injury issues,
so they're a little thin there.
A little thin.
They were solid there, but they were not terrifying, or they were not. You know, it was a clear cut below a Michigan or Ohio State defensive line right now.
Yeah.
And they have some turnover, and they also have turnover on the interior with the various Cothrans.
Thank God that those guys are gone.
Yeah, that was so confusing. But those guys were solid. I think they were underrated in terms of
one of them was really good.
Defense.
Don't ask me which.
Yeah, it's one of the two of them.
It was Cothran.
Yes.
Not yes, Cothran.
It,
kind
of it was the white guy.
Yeah.
But he was one of those dudes who didn't necessarily show up on the stat sheet, but helped a very solid run defense, and they got to replace that.
Their pass defense was also really good last year, especially on third down, and I think they lost most of that secondary. So that's a...
I mean, they're recruiting well, so they should be able to plug and play to somewhat, but this kind of feels like maybe not a great year, maybe kind of a interim year before they can.
I don't think they're contending for the playoff again this year.
Yeah, so
last year was definitely a peak Penn State in the peak.
I don't know.
Penn State.
Well, yeah.
Michigan State gets back Brian, I like the way Lewerke. a lot of starters from a team that bounced back from a 3-9 year and won a large number of games in generally unimpressive fashion.
Yeah, maybe went from underachieving to overachieving.
It felt like kind of like a 6-6 team followed by a 7-5 team that was like a 3-9 team and then a 9-3 team.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I mean, their offensive line has grown finally. I think some of them have gotten over 300 pounds finally.
Yeah.
is Cole Chewins there yet?
He is. I don't know. I don't think
he'll. He's probably at like 282.
He'll top out at 299 and just stay there for the rest of his life. Did LJ Scott finally leave or is
no,
he back?
No, LJ Scott's still
there. Oh, he's talking trash like in the offseason.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Buddy, you can't hold a football between your arms. Who are you talking trash to?
And they have to pull him off on third down because he can't pass or just refuses to pass.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a can't as much as a won't.
I was amazed that he came back because he seemed like the most disinterested guy in college football last year.
He's like I think the NFL told him to like get his crap together, and then they would.
I mean, if pass blocking is the stat most correlated with winning among running backs, to work on that.
Their wide receiver core, they have a couple of young guys who are all right, but like, I don't know. They just seem like okay.
They're big body guys. They'll push pass interference to like the offensive pass interference to like the limits that you can.
Like
still
they
get away
beat
with it.
John O'Korn by 4 points last year. Like how impressive is that?
They just had so many games that were in like a monsoon.
Yeah.
Yeah, their Penn State game.
They just brought
Penn State
their
biggest win.
Did they have a 3-hour delay in that game?
And Penn State was winning until like that thing came. And then afterwards, like, you know, it was just,
it wasn't football anymore.
It was muck ball.
Yeah,
and that's their biggest. That was their huge win, other than Michigan last year.
I mean, I do think they're talented. I do think they can push. I do think D'Antonio has proven that he can get more out of teams than we like to think he can.
Yeah,
and they've got some guys back there,
we may be underrating Felton Davis a little bit when we talk about those receivers.
He got nothing against Michigan last year.
Well, Michigan had the two best corners in the country.
He just has a no separation, all like go high point the ball guy. But
yeah, Michigan State's
not
going
to go high point the ball and do it. He, you know.
State doesn't
I think
worry
Cody
me against in a
too.
Passing game.
I mean,
I think so Lewerke
the
running.
Thing, the yeah, Lewerke running is it.
Yes.
Like, he's mobile enough to be, he's like a white guy quarterback, right?
And he's already proven that he can be productive on the ground behind an offensive line that's pretty shaky.
Yeah.
I mean, that offensive line was shuffling guys last year and wasn't that solid to begin with.
But they always just got just enough. It wasn't like Michigan State never had like a big offensive explosion in any game. They just, you know, got enough to win that one and get enough to the next one. Their
and
Indiana
they were
game was
blessed by God for some unforeseen reason. It's just par for the course. I mean, I don't think they're going to be like.
We're upset that the universe does not give Michigan State what they deserve.
I can't imagine Maryland not being a wreck after all this. Indiana is in the post Wile E. Coyote year under DeBoard.
And have to replace most of the defense.
Rutgers is Rutgers.
Yep.
We're going to take a break, come back, talk about the Big Ten West, which is just going to be us saying the word Wisconsin in unison, and then
Badger.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Passion for e-commerce.
Sell stuff online.
Security. Performance.
Conversion.
Beautiful user experiences.
Belle expérience utilisateur.
Monthly marketing.
PPC SEO.
Make your user a customer.
Conversion.
Ade Parfum for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Element show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores.
Hi, this is Seth from MGO Blog. Got another story for you from my wonderful Tales of Homeownership. There was like a musty smell coming from my crawl space, and when we opened up, there were like a bunch of bugs in there. Anyway, I called EcoIntelligent Homes, and it's a good thing I did because as soon as the spring came, that could have gotten a lot worse. I really recommend these guys. They will find the source of the issue. Their licensed teams will install the fixes. They help you qualify for the right local rebates, and they offer financing. EcoIntelligent Homes is an award-winning DTE Energy and Consumers Energy trade ally. Call them at 248-291-7815 or visit their website at ecointelligenthomes.com.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor, from San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Without a word of warning, the blues walked in this morning and circled around my lonely room. I didn't know why. My baby said, "We're through." Yesterday, this time I sang a love song.
All right, the Big Ten West is
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. We didn't do it together.
Sorry.
I should have done better with that. So Wisconsin has probably the all Big Ten offensive line, except one guy might not be as good.
And it's not really as much about whether one guy's not as good as they have to figure out which dude is the fifth starter and which dude is the like Big Ten's best backup offensive line.
Right. Once they name their starting five, we'll know who's the all Big Ten line.
They bring back Jonathan Taylor for a sophomore year. The horniest of
goodness,
all
there's
streams.
Still another year of Jonathan Taylor after this.
Hornibrook's back, and if he can just like not throw a ton of interceptions because his guys can't get any separation, that's going to be a really good passing game.
Although, update on that with Quintez Cephas and also maybe Danny Davis.
Danny Davis got suspended for two games.
Yeah, they're so light on that.
And then Cephas.
But Cephas, I mean, that sounds serious. The fact that he stepped away before it was announced.
By the way, we're
talking about that he's charged with sexual assault.
Yes.
By the way, we should mention that.
His statement about it seemed fairly brazen for someone who...
It did, but there... I mean, like, I don't necessarily think that tells you anything.
Okay. Not these days.
I think it tells you he's either very innocent or very guilty.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it says. Yeah,
I don't think there's much in between
with
that particular crime.
So I mean, that not having Cephas would be a big deal for them, but they have TJ Edwards back, Connolly. They have all of...
They have Andrew Van Ginkel, who's a great outside line. Like, I mean, they have a
Olive's
linebacker, Olive Sagapolu.
Thank you.
They did lose Connor Sheehy, who's one of my favorite
underrated
Big Ten players.
He's a very good player, but they're just going to have another guy who's just like him, probably.
And they got Dixon back, that tiny little soft.
Dakota Dixon.
And
Dixon.
Nice safety.
You know, they did survive the addition. They put Jim Leonard in as defensive coordinator, and that went completely fine. Like, I just think that they're going to be like, I think they're playoff good this year. I think this is like the year for Wisconsin.
If there is ever the year for Wisconsin, this is the year.
Unless last year was the year. Like, this is like
that's true. They were undefeated.
But like this feels like a team that, like, if you put them up against, well, not Clemson or Alabama, but like Oklahoma, I'd be like, okay.
And last year, Wisconsin would have been pasted by one of those teams, I think. I mean, Michigan was in it against them. I hate to use that as a bar for, like, you can't be a playoff team, but like, we were in that game.
Is there
under on number of hoodies worn on their defense? Oh,
God, don't even remind me of that.
Brian has crushed a paper cut.
So angry.
there is liquid on the conference.
Those cornerbacks are all gone, at least. Like, so like they have to get new hoodies. They're not returning the hoodies, at least.
The sound is Brian feasting on his kill.
The angriest sartorial response I've ever seen from you.
Visual podcast.
Very visual podcast.
Is there a contender to take down Wisconsin in that half of the league, or is that just a pipe dream?
Pipe dream.
Pipe dream.
Possibly Iowa, because like they...
Nah.
No.
Iowa. they have another Neiman.
What about...
Yeah.
Northwestern with NFL first round prospect Clayton Thorson and the Gaz.
They do have the Gaz. And that is a bit of a game changer.
Can someone explain who that is?
Stan Casciano.
Joe Casciano.
Yeah. Stan, whatever.
Generic first name, the Gaz.
The Gaz.
When we were putting together our All Big Ten teams, we kind of rediscovered and stumbled upon the fact that he is the Big Ten's returning sack leader.
And he's a strong side end.
He grades out well on PFF, and the film looks good.
His sacks are freaking impressive.
He had one where he ran through Brian Lewerke last year for a
sack
that I enjoyed thoroughly.
They also have a guy named Patty, which, when you think of it, is inevitable.
Patty Fisher.
Patty.
I think it was Alex who said in our Slack chat that sounds like a really bad pseudonym for Pat Fitzgerald.
He's just putting his pads back on and kind of running back out there. And
it's like, this is it. We see right through this.
But,
Northwestern.
Right. You know, if they can survive the loss of Justin Jackson after 35 years of service... Move the ball a little bit, like, you could see it, maybe.
Old ball carrier.
I mean,
they got some pieces.
I maintain they're never winning the Big Ten West until they get rid of Mick McCall as an offensive coordinator. Because that dude is partially, in fact, largely responsible for the moon game.
He's not largely responsible for. I mean,
Michigan had a lot to do with it. Okay, yeah, largely being like he had a close to 50%. He constructed the Northwestern offense that allowed the other half of that offensive catastrophe to occur.
Brady Hoke is the main culprit.
Well, a Hoke Borges.
Yeah, that's why do we always talk about this?
Sorry, it does happen. I was trying to just bag on Mick McCall, and you pushed back on me.
Can't bring up the
and he's
moon.
Bad.
You brought up the moon game.
And we could have just walked right past that as just the moon game, which is why we have names for these things so we don't necessarily have to delve into the specifics of who was involved on the Michigan side.
Anyway, Nebraska's probably in a year zero here.
Yeah, I mean, you got a lot of turnover.
Got to get that retirement Mike Riley out of the sheets first.
Indeed.
Settle down, Zach Smith.
And that's a team that it'll be interesting to see how much better they are at the end of the season than they are at the beginning.
Yes, but probably not very good at the beginning.
And thankfully, Michigan catches them as the conference opener.
And
Scott Frost can't catch a break against Michigan. He at UCF.
The quarterback is going to be.
They out-hit us and they still lost.
It's like Riker. Or
Riker,
Fife?
It's not Riker Fife, is it? No.
But his name is Riker or Fife. It's
a
different guy.
No, that person's name is Riker Fife.
I know, but there's a different guy named Riker or Fife who's their quarterback, I think. Or close. It's Riker Fife-ish.
Are you talking about the true freshman?
Possibly.
Who like was injured last year, so he's like an even more freshman and true freshman.
Okay, yeah, what's his name?
Why can't I find Bill Connolly's Nebraska preview?
No, Adrian Martinez is that guy's name. The other guy's Tristan Gebbia.
Yes!
That's the red shirt.
That's the Riker Fife.
Wait, is Adrian Martinez related to T-Mac?
No, he's not.
Oh, that's he's so not. Disappointing. You, I want to see that throwing motion like, again.
There's like, some genetic.
I want to see that throwing
he's
motion.
He's got the throwing motion.
Oh, hell yes.
Yes. That's they're not related whatsoever, no. But he has the throwing motion.
That's like asking.
A Martinez in Nebraska cannot throw a ball above his head. It needs to come from his shoulder with his elbow okay. Somehow sliding
nobody
through.
Nobody can see you demonstrating this. Both
I don't
of you
care.
Are demonstrating
it. Doesn't make any sense. If you see it,
you
doesn't make any more sense if you see it than if you don't.
Taylor Martinez.
Because I'm trying to talk my way through it while doing it because there's no other way to do
I've
it.
I've seen it.
It's an extremely unnatural throwing motion.
It's to imagine a Tyrannosaurus
I'm trying
Rex
to match
trying
words
to, throw a
to action.
I watched the YouTube video with him in slow motion. It, by the way,
watch the
asking
oh,
if someone,
classic.
Asking if someone named Martinez is related to another person named Martinez. It's like asking a Canadian if they know another Canadian.
No, not if they're a quarterback at Nebraska. Because Nebraska, come on.
All right.
Come on,
okay,
man.
Fine.
So, Tristan Gebbia.
So that's the Riker Fife. I feel like that is a fair assessment.
Riker. Yeah, that's fair. It's a Riker Fife by a different name.
Yeah. Except he's like a 4-star recruit. And Riker Fife was not.
Yeah, that's true.
Do we have anything to say about Minnesota and other...
Purdue? I was going to say Purdue is a more interesting team to me than Minnesota.
Yeah, Purdue could...
And they're still not a very interesting team to me because they lost a lot on defense.
Yeah, they lost Jalen Robinson, and that was a lot of what was going on up front
they
with them.
They also lost like a hunk of that linebacker core. Bentley is gone.
Jawan. I like that name because it sounds like someone getting hit by a linebacker.
Who is as big as Juwan Bentley?
Juwan.
That dude looked like a defensive end.
Hey, where's Juan? You know.
Juan Harris.
Juan yeah. Harris.
There's no way to know unless you Google at that moment.
Yeah, my information from 10 days ago is absolutely outdated
by
now.
Is he back in Iowa? Please tell me he's back in Iowa.
No, not yet. He's at Independence Community College. Which is in Wisconsin, so okay. He's still in Big Ten country.
He's moving back towards Iowa.
He is in Big Ten country. He has moved west, and yes, he is a season away from being back in Division I.
Okay, so he'll be at Iowa next year, and then he'll transfer back to Indiana.
Yeah, I mean, it has been told in the stars.
As the Juan Harris turns.
I mean, you know, what is there to say about Purdue? We're going to see some... variations on flea flickers. They have some very good tight ends.
They're so watchable.
They have their quarterbacks.
They don't have Danthrop, but they have his brother, right?
Yeah, Jackson Anthrop.
Janthrop,
yes.
I feel like Purdue should just
go to
Monahans.
Like a sports apparel company.
Like they should just be the Brazil of college football, where it's just one.
Just mononyms for everybody?
Yeah, and everybody on the offensive line is named Fred.
And their coach is just Brom now.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Brom.
Because it can't just be Jeff. Jeff is not a good monitor.
There are literally like six Brazilian football players to go by Fred. At one point, you had to specify whether you were talking about the Fred who played for like some French team or the Fred who played for some Brazilian team. Because they were both like kind of...
National team quality-ish, yeah.
And they were both
Man, we have really
Fred.
Strayed here, by the way. But
well, I just felt that was important information. We could be talking about Minnesota. Which just named a walk-on freshman as their starting quarterback.
They did.
Big Ten!
Big Ten! P.J. Fleck is there, which means they'll get more attention than they probably deserve, I think, at this point.
Last season was so bad, though, that...
Illinois is in the league.
Illinois is also in the league, and they have a former NFL head coach, and they're really bad. And we took their quarterback, and we don't even care.
Oh, right.
We have not mentioned him or thought about him or even remembered that he was on the roster until this moment. But Jeff George Jr. is at Michigan now.
That was probably the dumbest off-season storyline where like they take Jeff George Jr. and people are like,
is this going to affect Brandon
what's
Peters?
What's with this transfer epidemic of quarterbacks at Michigan?
We also got
people thought that was going to push out Brandon Peters.
We also got Berkeley Edwards, by the way.
We did.
We do.
It was a little later than Braylon thought, but it
maybe
did
he
happen.
Can return punts, huh? Maybe kicks.
Maybe, you know, but
not,
those
but
don't
not
matter.
From Minnesota.
So why not?
I think it's clear that this podcast has ended probably about 5 minutes ago.
I mean, we should probably put forth some sort of like season prediction.
Y'all, fine. One more break, and then we put our asses on the line. Not literally.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was just a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, NMLS number 116-1358.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
All right, ass is literally on the line time. Get that ass out.
I'm sorry.
Is this a bet?
No.
That was...
Everybody keep your asses in.
Nobody's going to laugh at what just happened because it was entirely visual.
Anyway, no, stop. Nothing happened.
I'm trying. Nothing happened. This is a very professional podcast.
Well, it's
been said.
It took us like 17 hours to get to it.
In yeah. Three podcasts, technically.
But the season can start now.
All right, so season Michigan record. You, Seth.
9 wins plus a win in the bowl game.
So 10 wins.
10 wins.
Who do they lose to?
I got to go to Ohio State.
Okay.
And Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
And something. Like, you know, there's always a something.
Like a stupid one?
Yeah, like a drop the balls at Iowa kind of game.
Are we playing Iowa?
Like, No, we're not. Thank goodness we're not playing Iowa this year.
No, we play Penn State.
I'm never going back to
our crossovers are Wisconsin, Nebraska, and...
Northwestern. At Northwestern. So that's a home game.
That's like the top three teams in the West.
That is. Yeah. Although
Nebraska, not really.
Nebraska, not really. And again, Purdue. At Northwestern, that's a home game.
It is a home game.
And they catch Nebraska in the first game of conference play when they have a new coach.
All in men, two wins then. Two losses.
Two wins.
No, that's Michigan State. Michigan, two.
Man, two. I wish. I did. Yeah. We gotta go. After Hail to the Victors 2017, I wouldn't take that tack.
I predict this is a good team, but like there's like so many things that can go wrong, and it's such a hard schedule that like just you know when the luck rears,
yep,
it goes. So two losses at least.
Yeah,
yeah, that's my feel as well. Is
10-2,
and I'd be. I think more likely to lean towards a third loss than for them to get through with one because
their schedule,
the schedule's brutal. Notre Dame, as far as I'm concerned, is always a weirdo coin flip in week one.
I feel like the reports coming out of Notre Dame practices are like, oh, these guys.
They are concerning, but also the reports coming out of Michigan's practices are that John Runyon is the left tackle.
I know, but we're not talking about like, well, can
Brandon Wimbush throw a football accurately?
Right, can he throw a slant?
And they're not really set up to deal, like, Notre Dame is not great at edge rushing. They're, a very large nose tackle and really fast linebackers.
Well,
Notre Dame game never makes sense.
No, that's true.
It's a first game.
Like I think we just have to accept that one. We are at the mercy of the college football gods.
The one, and please, Michigan State fans, all turn your headphones off now, real quick. I'm scared of them going to Michigan State. Like, just bad things always seem to happen against them. And
I have not reached a point in life where I feel good about playing Michigan State.
Yeah,
especially in East Lansing.
I mean, I feel like
at Ohio State is brutal.
Yeah,
it's just brutal. A brutal end to the season.
I kind of feel the same way, Ace. I have no disagreements really. I agree with your take. So there you go, asses. Not quite literally on the line. We're working on it. We're working on it.
That manning up.
Man up! But that's gendered language that we shouldn't use.
Yes, it is.
Except it's all right. You know, rocked up. This podcast is definitely...
It's over. Thank you for listening to the last part of the MGO blog preseason podcast. Congratulations for getting through all of that.
Who's got it better than